Welcome to the Business Addicts Podcast. I have Aaron Ogden here, and Aaron has been an amazing person in my life for the last year, introducing me to opportunities that I would not have had otherwise, and I'm excited to have her here on the podcast with us today because she also does work in family business, and she is in family business, so we just want to dig into all the things fun. Aaron, do you mind telling us a little bit of how you got into what you're doing and a little bit of your background story and what you do?
I'm Aaron Ogden. I'm an attorney. So we started our law firm in 2016. At the time, it was just my husband and I. We, depending on who you ask about why we started, it was either his idea or mine. My joke is I gave him an offer he couldn't refuse. But in any case, we decided to do it. And we thought at the time, you know, we just need this and we can do it. And we've kind of consistently grown such that now we have more than us. But one thing that we've tried to focus on throughout is we are a business law firm. We work with business, but so many small businesses are like us in that we have families and we have lives, and we want to make sure that we are recognizing that priority. And that we work to live, not live to work. But that also we have clients that depend on us. So we can't just be like, screw it. I'm leaving, you know, for the next 2 weeks without a way for them to reach out, right? So we really focus on teamwork. We focus on making sure that we're taking care of it and our clients are taken care of.
Well, I love, I think when I first met you, you had said something like, you want people to think differently about attorneys when they think of you, or how do you say that usually? Like,
I often joke that I'm on a mission to make people think that attorneys are good.
Yeah.
And that we're a service industry. We are here to serve. And so many times people think, oh, you're here to serve yourself. No, we're here to serve you. And so when I get done with talking to people, I want them to see us as a resource and a source of, source of knowledge and a source of almost peace. Like, we always say that we want to have our clients be able to move forward with confidence and clarity and feel that they have the information they need to make the decisions that they have to make. Because being a business owner, you have to make a lot of really hard decisions. And it's even harder if you are just throwing darts blindfolded. And I know that law can be difficult. It can be, it can feel like a quagmire. So if we can help make it so you can be confident and understand the risks and understand the benefits, then we've done our job.
And this is another aside, but I love that you're not really wearing a suit or anything today. We're just like, because when I think of attorneys, I think of suits.
Right. So, we are remote. We started remote since 2016. And one thing that we often get told is that we don't look like attorneys and we don't talk like attorneys because we have kind of 4 points of culture. And one of them is speak English, not legalese. And then also we work with a lot of, like I said, small business owners and even not small business owners, but people that, you know, like software and things like that, where if you show up in a suit, the first thing they think is, are you going to a funeral? I've literally had people ask, they're like, is everything okay? And I'm like, oh no, I just thought I should dress like a lawyer today. And they're like, yeah, don't. It almost makes them nervous. Though today I also have a 3-year-old who's home from daycare with a fever. So I'm dressed in daycare mode.
That speaks to the work that we're doing in family business. And so you're living it, right? Like this is how it works today. We have family, we have business, and they merge together. Like, this idea that they're separate, you know, when does that really actually happen? And, you know, you can take the kids to daycare, but then they still get sick. Like, this isn't a machine that, you know, doesn't break down. This is real life.
Right. And so how do you build resiliency?
Yes. Yeah.
How do you build tolerance in the processes so that when things like this happen, it's not everything grinds to a halt?
Yeah. So can you talk a little bit about the work that you do and what you see in family businesses, and specifically some of the things that maybe surprise you, or like, what are some of the things that you would love for people to think about when they think about family business and your perspective in it?
Sure. First thing, have all the awkward conversations from the beginning. So many family businesses don't want to rock the boat. And what they don't realize is by not doing the small rocks at the beginning, you end up being in a big storm later, and it doesn't help. So having those communication, having those discussions, not being afraid to pull in a third party to help moderate. Business coaches can be really good at that and generally less expensive than attorneys. So I always want people to talk to kind of those coaches or other moderators before they get to me, because if you've gotten to me, I'm usually the more expensive option. Now, if you don't need a third person, great, but you have to have those conversations. And one thing I see in family is a lot of that, either because they don't want to upset the other side, or they revert back to kids, you know, oh, the bossy mom, you know, and they carry more baggage, right? You don't get a chance to reinvent yourself as easily in family business, right? And we all went to college where you're able to shed some of that because no one knew us. When you go to your first job or when you switch jobs, you're able to kind of reinvent if you want. It's really hard to reinvent someone who's known you since you were either they were changing your diapers or you were changing theirs.
You're speaking powerful words right now. Like, this is what we see. And we talk about, Kevin and I talk about, you know, the power of reinvention, but in the family business structure, there's just, it's so much more difficult. Like what you're speaking to is, here's what it's like actually for others that aren't in family business. Yes, they have similar challenges. They still need to reinvent themselves, but they have the space to do it. They can literally change jobs. No one knows them again. And they get to decide how they're showing up in that environment.
The good news is with family things, the family businesses that do it well, they are amazing in their abilities to allow that reinvention because you already have the trust built up. You don't have to you don't have to prove this reinvention it works. They know they've seen, they recognize what that is. And so the family businesses that work well lean in to that. We've known you for a long time. We trust you. We want to help you succeed. Right? You don't have to worry about, are they wanting me to succeed? That, of course they do. That's why we're here. The ones that don't work are they have the entire sabotage of, you know, bad family dynamics. The good ones have all of the, you know, virtuous cycles of good family dynamics. And so I've seen families that have just, you know, that they're on the third or fourth generation of this business and really trying to build, because they now have this legacy that they want to make sure. So they're really trying to build the next generation to be leaders. They're trying to build them that they understand it and love it as much as they do and give them space to grow and give them space to take initiative and do, because they realize, hey, you can't run this the same way as grandpa. So how do we take advantage of that? And so it sometimes is even more inspiring when you see that, because you have that support that you may not get in other corporate settings. You can see both extremes.
So I'm wondering, as you're saying some of this and just thinking of yourself, you're a mm-hmm. female in the world of attorneys owning mm-hmm. a family business yourself. What do you see with women in the family businesses? Do you see any changes or shifts, you know, over the years even?
I think the biggest shift is kind of the same where women for a long, long time held purse strings and things, but they were behind the scenes. We're seeing more that they are not as behind the scenes and being taken. This especially happens in family businesses that are like side gigs. Where the husband's involved in something else and they start a smaller side gig and the wife is taking over, but certainly not the only time that's done that. And so that's been, I think a lot of small business, you have that opportunity. But we still have issues where women in business can struggle, especially if they're trying to go into male dominated things. Like, I'm not seeing more women welding companies starting. You know, you still see maybe more women starting stuff, but not necessarily outside of female dominated things, which
yeah,
I'd
that
like
makes sense. More. Right. Right. Yeah. The thing that I've noticed is women in general, this is speaking in generalities, tend to not think or dream as big and worry, like it needs to be self-funded, you know, instead of like, oh, how can I create an idea and use other people's money to help me get where I'm trying to go? And maybe you see, you know, something else, but that's, I would say in general.
I haven't seen that as a gendered thing. No, there is certainly lots of studies that show that women tend to be more conservative in investments, but they also tend to have better investments year round because they maybe not have as many home runs, but they have more doubles and triples.
Interesting.
As opposed to strikeouts. I do see in general, family businesses tend to be risk averse and tend to bootstrap more, tend not to want to take advantage of credits or things like that, because that's not how the generations did it past, or they don't want to be the reason why something tanks. Nobody wants to be the reason why the family business goes into bankruptcy.
That's huge. So,
sometimes they tend to be more risk averse than they need to be, because they are carrying a load that maybe a non-family business owner doesn't see.
So I want to talk a little bit about your industry specifically. When I was in family business, if I had to call an attorney, it was a big day. It was a bad day. It wasn't usually, you know, something like let's plan or think about this in advance, you know, maybe a little bit of research along the way. But what do you see that, you know, like in your industry that you would love for family businesses to know about specifically?
So one quote that I've been using a lot lately with my team, because we're doing our annual goals and all that, it was from Abraham Lincoln. And I might not get it exactly right, but it's something like, if you give me 8 hours to cut down a tree, I'll spend 6 of it sharpening the axe. And the point of that is spend time planning, spend time preparing, and then do the work. So then the work is easier then. But also, often a lot of the problems don't ever show up because you spent the time preparing and planning. And so one thing that we try to do is be the ounce of prevention, so you don't have that pound of cure, right? Let's spend time planning. Let's spend time thinking about where you want to go. We're very strategy oriented. Like, where do you want to go? Because if we know where you want to go, then we can help you make those decisions along the way. Is this a good, you know, we have a fork in the road, which is the better path? You have a decision here. Which of these options is good? Well, if you don't know where you're going, any option is good. But if I know where you're going, where you need to be, then it makes that decision so much easier. And so really having, again, that beginning, you know, that awkward conversations, the planning sessions, the strategy, so we know where everybody wants to go and that they're all on the same page, makes it a lot easier. And then it makes us easier to help you gain that confidence and clarity that you're getting to where you want to go. Other things that we like is that we often say that we want, even on those bad days, we want the phone call to, the first thing to think of is, I want to call Aaron because I know at the end I'll have a plan. I know at the end I'll have more information. Right? Like I don't want the, oh crap, we have to call the lawyer. I want it to be, oh, we need to call the lawyer because she'll make sense of this, or she'll help us make sense of this, or at least help us ask better questions of the other people. And so I want that phone call not to be, oh crap, let's call the lawyer, but oh, this will help. But a lot of times it's not, because you haven't done it. But one thing we know is that we see a lot of stupid stuff. We see so much stupid
stuff. Okay, you got to tell us some of it.
Like, no. I can't, right? Because it's confidentiality.
Bummer!
But the answer is, it doesn't matter what your stupid thing you've done, we've seen worse. It is rare that you come up with something I haven't seen before. It's rare that you are the dumbest thing that I've done. And the dumbest things are usually done by the most successful, because they're more the risk.
Ah, interesting.
And so whatever it is, I'm not going to think worse of you. I'm just going to be like, oh, well, that's the problem. Let's fix it. We just, not to say that we don't care, just that we've seen so much stuff that it's not going to phase us. And if it is going to phase us, well, then now you've piqued our interest. Right.
Right. Right. So it's a non-judgmental space primarily, where you're then basically, you guys like puzzles and you like trying to help figure out, and
we love problem solving. We love coming up with the solutions. We love moving forward. Otherwise we wouldn't do what we do. And I think people think that afterwards we hang up and go to our partner and be like, guess what this Yahoo did? Well, no, because we got too much to do, and your Yahoo-ness is probably nothing. And you're like, oh, tally another one of those.
Yeah. Mm. So when you decided to go into business with your husband.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. That was a great idea. I love it.
Uh-huh. Always.
Uh-huh. And in this world where I don't really know that many attorneys that are in business with their spouses, is that a normal thing in your industry and I'm just not aware of it?
I don't think it's that rare, especially in small firms.
Okay.
Because a lot of people meet each other in law school.
Good point. Yeah.
And then because of conflicts checks and because of all the things, it's either you have to talk, either have to be in business together, or you cannot talk about business with each other. Because you can't talk about, like, I had a bad day. I had a person who was mean about things. And like, that's the extent that you can share it. Whereas if you are there, you're like, I talked to this opposing counsel today and he said this, and is that right? Right. And so you can kind of, you see that a bit more, like, especially in rural and, small, we have a lot of, husbands and wives a lot. So I think it's not rare. I think it's rare to see two spouses in two different firms because of that.
Okay, that makes sense.
I know a couple, but most of them I know that are in the same.
And so was there anything that you did differently to set up your structure, or anything that you really would love for people to think about in new ways?
We took lessons that we learned from our clients and that had done it well. And they, from the beginning, we wanted to make sure whose lane was whose, right? Whose job is this? So you're not always fighting. Like, who gets veto power over this? Who doesn't? Like, who gets, what's the expectations of each? You know, all the awkward conversations from the beginning, because we didn't want that because I'm the majority owner, Jeff is not, because he has another job. He's a professor at the law school. So I didn't want to feel like I was always shut down and not be able to do stuff. Right. And he didn't want to feel like that I felt that way, but also he has a voice. So how do we make sure that voice, and as we've added people, it's been useful too, because then we, make sure, how do the smaller voices get heard? How do they, but also how do they not see us as a block? Sometimes people like, we are like, no, Jeff and I won't always vote together. And so making it clear what to expect from us is also important when you bring in. So, because a lot of family businesses are family business, but it's not just family that works there. So making it clear, they know what that means and what the lanes are. And so you can't just and run around me to Jeff or vice versa.
Do you deal with like subcontractor, you know, like W-2 versus 1099 type stuff?
Yep.
And like, let's say that family members want to work for other family members. And I mean, this happens, right? Where do you see things going?
But regardless of who it is, the things that go wrong there is thinking just because you call it an independent contractor, it is. Know what your meets and bounds are. Not having the conversations about expectations. If you're going to say it's an independent contractor, then you want to exert all of the control. You can't. If the person coming in is thinking they have control and you don't give it to them, again, that can be heightened in family circumstances because they're bringing in baggage maybe that you wouldn't have otherwise, and it's harder for them maybe to quit, or it's harder for you to fire them. So again, having the clear expectations of what is expected, what is punishable, and what does that punishment look like, you know, I just don't hire you, give you the good stuff? Like, what is it?
I really appreciate what you just brought up about the firing portion. Eventually I couldn't disconnect. Like, and we see this with the clients that we have where the kids, it's like in their DNA, the business is in their DNA, and they almost become more loyal to the business than to the business owner, which is usually, you know, like say a parent or a son or something. And I know that this was my story also, so I see it, and I couldn't leave. I couldn't leave my team, the employees that were there. Yeah, it was horrible.
And you can be in a thing that you know it's not fitting you, but you feel like you're not quitting a job.
No.
Right? You're quitting not the same. Much more. And again, the good companies are like, of course I want you to succeed. Of course, if that's not here, how do we help you get there? But that is, even if the parents are thinking that, it can be hard to be felt by the kids, because it either isn't communicated, or like you said, they have their own sense of loyalty and they feel like, well, I'm quitting on me, right?
Yeah. One of the things that, I mean, because I fired a lot of people over the years, and I turned to coaching out the door instead of, you know, thinking of it as firing. It's just no longer the right place. And in the end, when I was that person that couldn't quit, or, you know, what I realized is the importance of being able to say thank you. Thank you for the time you did have, instead of like everything has to go up in flames because, you know, the last little bit things are not working out. Okay. But there must've been a point where it was good. Otherwise, why are we still here? You know? So how do we say thank you and recognize? Yeah.
And I think that's true for every business. I think for family, it can be even harder because like the people that you fired, you may not have seen ever again.
Right.
The people who quit can avoid you. Family sometimes is harder to do that.
Because, horrible. Yeah.
You know, hospitals, it's still around, especially if it's not just, you know, parents or siblings, but if it's your spouse.
Mm-hmm. Oh, my word.
Then it's really hard.
Right. How do you have that conversation? How do you have that conversation? I have told my husband, I was like, if you were an employee right now, I would have fired you. Like, this is not an expectation that, like, I know how to work with in the business.
It can be really, really hard. And so how do you voice your needs?
Yeah.
And it can be especially hard if your spouse is, because it gets really wrapped up. Like, you didn't wash the dishes this morning, and you know, you didn't wash the dishes this morning. You didn't help fold. I had to take the kids this, and now you are, you know, doing whatever at work. And so again, for regular stuff, you have that separation where if someone did all that stuff, you don't, and then someone else at work did that thing, you don't have that whole baggage. And now you're like, you just don't listen to me. You don't respect my time. You don't. And you're like, you can't really separate them But you also have to be very cognizant of the bleed.
Yeah. No, what you're saying makes complete sense. So I was working in family business, and when Kevin and I would have difficult issues, he was still working in a separate business, and I would go to work as a way to just get out of whatever we were in, right? Like, I'll deal with that later, moving on, you know. And sometimes, like, our work, we feel good about ourselves because we can get something done and it's going in the right direction, versus some of those relationship issues or the behind the scenes things maybe aren't going in that direction. Well, I can go to work and feel good about myself, right?
Right.
But then when it's with a spouse, it doesn't just go away. How do we do both? Yeah.
It can have a lot of luck, and especially what if if you have something going on at work and the spouse is rocking it at work and the other one isn't because of whatever reasons, then it can also have issues. You know, I'm having really good sales. Well, that's great. Except for I'm having HR issues, and
right.
And now you're having a really hard time escaping.
That's really important, because it's hard to celebrate and have empathy at the same time for people. Right, yeah.
So often one question that my husband and I will ask each other, do you want me to help solve this, or do you want me to just listen?
Yeah.
Right. What are you asking of me right now? Because we're problem solvers. If you come at me with a problem, I want to solve it.
Yeah.
And sometimes he doesn't want me to solve it.
Mm-hmm.
He wants me to just say, that sucks.
Right. Just be with him.
Right. Sucks. And with me, often I'm like, no, I'm not telling you because I know it sucks. Help me fix it. And he's like, maybe not.
Yeah. So one of the things that we've noticed is that sometimes in family business, their first call is to an attorney,
mm-hmm.
but it's really that it's a personal issue. Like, how much do you get involved in that kind of stuff?
Depends on the personal issue. Because sometimes the personal issue isn't so personal, and sometimes they think it's a business issue and it's a personal issue.
Gotcha.
So, like, we just had a call earlier this week about succession planning. How much is that law? How much is that personal? Because it was parents selling to kids. And that can be both.
Yeah.
So there's that. But we're also, one of the things that we say is, like, if you think we can help, call. If it's not our thing, we can tell you that. I'm sorry, that's not my thing. But that's so-and-so. You are having a business divorce and a personal divorce.
Right.
Okay, we can help you with a personal divorce, but you should probably talk to Holly mm-hmm. over here. And then we will work with them to make sure it all makes sense, right? So the marital estate is getting addressed correctly in both cases.
That's a big deal. I didn't think about that. I mean, my dad went through a divorce, but it was, so my mom died and then he got remarried and then he got divorced. But in that case, they both kind of came into it with the same expectation. Whatever we had before, that's different, you know, than some. And
especially if they help both build it.
Yeah. Yeah. My mom didn't know what to do when there were issues. She didn't know how to get out of it. And it's part of, you know, what really ate at her. Like, mm-hmm. I remember sitting in the parking lot. She had the financial, what is it called when you do like a financial separation or something before a divorce? Like she had all the paperwork filled out, and the attorney sat there, and she looked at him and she goes, I know this is what I should do and I can't.
Right.
It was tough.
Right. And so it can be difficult. And there's some different things that happen on the legal side that often I don't know divorce law well. The divorce lawyers don't know us well. So being able to talk to each other is really important. Because one of the things that we also, I say we have parts of culture, is one of us play well with others. Because one thing that businesses have is other helpers, right? Other professionals that are helping her. So if you're going through a divorce, we need to be talking to that. If you're going through estate planning and your family law, your estate planning attorney might need to talk to us. Your accountant, and we should be on the same page. Your financial planner and we might need to be on the same page, especially in that succession planning thing. I was talking to somebody about that, and I was like, are you gifting any ownership? And they're like, oh, maybe. I'm like, well, you need to talk to your financial planner. You need to talk to your tax advisor, because legally I can do that, but you may not want that based on your taxes and their taxes. And let's get on a call. Let's talk. And being able to have all of those team talking to each other is really important, because what we don't want is that you always feel like you're the monkey in the middle.
Mm-hmm.
Being pulled every which direction.
And there are a lot of options. You know, like someone said to me, she was like, I got into the storage business because I thought it was easy. She's like, I didn't realize there were 10,001 ways to do storage. Like, if there are that many ways to do storage, there's that many ways to do business. And so you're coming at it from this perspective of like, okay, if I can talk to your accountant, then we speak a similar language right away, really quickly. We don't have to say as much. We get it.
Maybe. Or maybe just making sure that they are thinking the same thing. Like,
considering,
A goofy example is that happens is, we'll ask you, like, are you an LLC or a corporation? And lots of times people go, I don't know. And then they'll say, oh, I'm a corporation. And then we'll look up and we're like, it says you're an LLC. And they're like, what? And I'm like, are you taxed as a S corp? Yeah, maybe. Right. And so that's a part where, like, us being able to talk to the accountant right away skips over some of that, but also we then both the accountant and us can re-educate and let them know what that means and how that is and see if they've been maybe signing papers wrong. But also when you're looking at doing certain things, having it on the same page, because there's so many, I joke that all of business is tax. There's so many implications that we want to make sure that if you're getting three pieces of advice, how can you sort through it? I need to understand why they're giving that advice. Because sometimes I'm like, well, that's weird. And it's because we're missing pieces. You told them something they didn't tell me, or you didn't tell them something I told, you know? And so being able to be like, oh, well, that makes more sense now that we all know this.
Yeah. You're bringing up so many thoughts. I mean, everything from, going back to what you had said about succession planning, like thinking about that next generation, how do we want to do that? And some of the language that I use is like, entrepreneurs don't retire. And if they do, it's 84, not 62. Like, let's just normalize some of this stuff. But I don't think the entrepreneurial world is sort of entrepreneurial, right? There isn't like a set way to do.
For sure. And I would hesitate to say it's important to know which family firm you're in, because there are people that don't want to retire. They want to, you know, die in their boots. And there are others that want to retire early. And if you think your parents are one and they think they're the other, that's where we see a lot of tension.
Yeah.
And both sides cranking the arms of others. And it just makes it so, again, we have a hard time saying, okay, what is it you want? I can't. And the answer is, you don't know what you want.
Ultimately, I think that's where the challenge comes in, because I hear the parents, they've been saying they want to retire. They even still tell us they want to retire, but then their action says they want to get right back in, and they don't. And the words that they use, even with the kids, you know, is like, well, they're not capable yet. Well, is it that they're not capable, or is that kind of an excuse because you don't want to leave yet? Like, which one is it?
Right. Yep.
Well, is there anything else that you feel has been left unsaid today?
The number one thing that I always make sure when I'm talking about any size business is make sure your books are in order. If your books are not in order, no one can help you. So the first thing you do, if you're looking at like, what's my next step, and your books aren't in order, don't pass go. Don't collect $200. Pay a bookkeeper, because in the long run, they will pay for themselves. So people always are like, who should you talk to first? I'm like, bookkeeper.
I love that. That's cool.
So that's, if I don't get that said, I always make sure that's put up. Get your books in order.
Mm-hmm. No, that's a big deal.
Especially in family law because, or in family business, because then that can be a source of contention.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't have to.
You're not lying. I mean, I was the bookkeeper for a long time and oversaw it, you know, when I wasn't the one doing it anymore. And when I would pull the numbers, I actually had him say to me, I would give you a raise, but the profit is too good. And so you must have done something wrong. And I said, well, will you have a third person evaluate that then? Because obviously I'm doing the best I can and they're taking them for taxes. Like, obviously they're not having a problem with them. And he said, no, because that's why I'm paying you and you need to just fix up your own mess. So I think it was the, you know, I don't need to give anyone a raise. We don't need to give anyone compensation here. But I do think that there were fears behind that around seeing how taxes are done versus knowing your numbers. And like what we do for taxes as businesses is different than like really understanding, you know, the cash flow side of it. And I think he just kind of got to the point where it was like, numbers are just made up.
Numbers can't feel made up because you need to have those numbers to make appropriate decisions. And if you're not, all of those problems again can be heightened in family because now you're pulling in emotions.
Yeah. No, I mean, that's what I found out. That's why I'm so passionate about this is because it wasn't numbers I thought didn't lie, you know, and like, let's not be emotional about business. But the reality is it was emotional and the numbers were emotional.
Numbers don't lie, but they also don't tell the story.
Yes.
You tell the story with the numbers and you can use those numbers to tell different stories. So numbers don't lie because they don't tell the story. You do. And you can make those numbers say lots of things.
Totally agree. Yeah. Yeah. Oh man, that's powerful. Well, Erin, it's amazing to get to connect with you and hear, you know, what you're doing and helping business owners in. And I love that you have this virtual business where you're just like, we can help businesses in a new way and kind of take the scary part out of the legal, like legalism, whatever, however they say, it's legal speak is a thing.
Legalese is a total thing and it doesn't have to be. Now at times we'll catch ourselves, but our clients have permission to be like, hold up, using words, and that's on us, right? But that's part of why we have the culture statement in front. And so if we're not doing that, you need to tell us that that's our bad. If you don't understand what we're saying, that's our fault. You have to, like, it's not you that is doing something wrong. It's us. So by being forward with that as part of our culture, it gives them permission to be like, you're using words. I'm sure you know what they mean, but we don't. And so it gives them permission to be like, back up. Remember your promise?
Yeah, that's huge. That's powerful. Thank you.
My pleasure.
Thank you for tuning in. And to stay in touch, email us at info@businessaddictspodcast.com.